Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Evan Horowitz.
Something is breaking down. The old system of hiding it, of denying it, of covering it up, paying off, is breaking down. People are saying, we want honesty.
That's A.W. Richard Sipe speaking on CNN back in 2002 about the sex abuse crisis in the Catholic Church. Sipe died last week in California at the age of 85. You may not immediately recognize his name, but Sipe was a key figure in modern Boston history, an indispensable aide to the Boston Globe team that exposed a pattern of sex abuse, cover-up, and secrecy within the Catholic Church back in 2002. Sipe himself was a psychotherapist, a former Benedictine priest, and a fierce advocate, even when no one would listen. Joining me now is one of the members of that Pulitzer Prize-winning Globe Spotlight team who benefited from Sipe's research and friendship, Michael Resendiz. Hello, Michael.
Hey, hello. Pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you. I'm interested both in some perspective on Sipe and on that era where he was so helpful. How did you get to know him?
Well, I got to know him when Phil Saviano dropped by the Globe Spotlight office. Phil is a survivor of clergy sexual abuse. And if you've seen the Spotlight movie, you can see a very accurate scene where he drops by with a lot of evidence of more abuse.
And in like a cardboard box.
Yeah, he had a cardboard box. It's literally true. A cardboard box filled with books and documents. And in that box was a CD. And on the CD were a bunch of documents. And I went through the CD. And in it, there was Richard Sipe's expert testimony in the criminal trial of a priest in Dallas, Texas, who was convicted of sex crimes. And I read this document, and I just knew this was the guy. His explanation of clergy sexual abuse was so deep and so profound that I immediately tried to call him.
And that call turned out to be quite helpful. He was instrumental in what? In how you thought about it and getting data? And how was he helpful?
He was helpful in so many ways. He knew there was a pattern. He knew that this ran very, very deeply within the Catholic Church all over the world. You know, when we started doing our reporting, we literally couldn't believe what we were finding. There were so many victims. There were so many bad priests. How could this be possible? Richard told us how it was possible.
And how was it possible? I mean, the numbers in some way, they don't cease to be startling just because we know them to be true.
No, now this scandal is erupting in countries all over the world, and we can see that this is truly systemic. We can see that what happened in Boston was nothing unusual. There's nothing funny in the water in the city of Boston. This is a systemic problem in the Catholic Church all over the world. Richard believes it all comes from the culture of celibacy, not celibacy itself, but the culture of celibacy. And essentially, what Richard points out is that all priests are prohibited from having any sex at all, which is a very unnatural condition to live in. And some priests are having sex with women, and some are having sex with men, and a smaller cohort is having sex with children. What Richard points out is since they're all transgressing, they all have an interest in protecting one another, especially when their superiors are having sex of one variety or another.
So what undergirds the culture of abuse is a kind of culture of protection where there are priests protecting one another from all kinds of transgressions against celibacy.
In short, it is a secret society running a protection racket.
Just to get a sense for Sipe's involvement, maybe it's worth playing a clip from the movie, the 2015 movie Spotlight, which chronicled the Globe's reporting on that story. In the movie, you're played by Mark Ruffalo.
Yes.
And we hear in this scene Richard Sipe on speakerphone breaking down his findings to the Spotlight team.
My estimates suggest 6% act out sexually with minors.
6% of what?
6% of all priests.
How many priests do we have in Boston?
About 1,500. 1% is 15. 6% is 90.
Wait. 90 priests.
Is that possible?
From a metric standpoint, yes. That would certainly be in line with my findings.
I mean, in that scene, and throughout the movie in general, part of the role he plays is to make you believe that it's possible, that you're not on some kind of witch hunt where you're seeing abuse everywhere because you're looking for it. But in fact, that if you're unearthing dozens of cases, it's because mathematically there are probably dozens of cases.
Exactly. I mean, we were just so stunned at what we were discovering. I mean, we started our investigation with one priest, one. And when we realized there might be half a dozen, we were just astounded. And here's Richard Sipe saying, well, actually, it might be 90. And I have to point out that today, just in the Boston Archdiocese, the number is 250.
Wow.
So that works out to a little more than 10%, not 6%. So Richard, who was vilified at the time he released his findings and his research, the man who was vilified was actually making a conservative estimate.
And when you're talking to him, this is 2002, he'd been saying this, or 2001, he'd been saying this for over a decade, right? He'd been saying it in the 80s. He published a book in 1990. He'd been screaming this into the void for some time.
That's absolutely correct. Screaming it into the void is a good way to put it. I mean, he went everywhere. He was an expert witness in trial after trial, in civil suit after civil suit, and never really gained any traction, I think in part because of the really profound cover-up of clergy sexual abuse, and also because people just couldn't believe it.
It's interesting that he could be an expert witness, that the legal system took him seriously in a way before the public did. You know, even as journalists, you know, you guys had trouble taking it seriously. Was it the influence of the church? I mean, what factors prevented people from taking this threat seriously or his warnings seriously?
You have to understand that not very long ago, 15 years ago, certainly 30 or 40 years ago, virtually every part of society was involved in this cover-up. You know, if a priest got caught abusing a child and it was reported to the police, there was never an arrest. There was never an arraignment. There was never a trial. Everything got hushed up. I've heard from reporters all over the country who had stories about priests abusing children who either didn't follow up because it was too incredible or who were discouraged by their editors. I mean, this happened everywhere. So the press, the judiciary, the law enforcement, all of these arms of our society were part of the cover-up. And as Richard said in your opening segment, this is what has started to break down.
You kept in touch with him afterwards over the years, at least a little bit. Did he feel that it had broken down, that progress was being made, that he was making a difference, had made a difference?
Yes. I mean, I kept in close touch with Richard, and he did believe that progress was being made in a sense that the system of cover-up was disintegrating, that people were no longer willing to cover up for priests who abuse children. On the other hand, I think he remained quite pessimistic about the ability of the Catholic Church to seriously do anything about this in a systemic way.
I think it's just worth saying, because I don't know that we did, that Richard himself was a Catholic. He had started life, he was an ordained priest. He had been a monk. So, I mean, he knew this system from the inside. I mean, there's a great line from Joyce that, you know, some people are injected with the Jesuit strain just in the wrong way. There's that sense, like, he knew this from the inside, and that's what made him want to reform the church so desperately. Is that your sense for his motivation?
Yes. I mean, Richard is someone who really loved the church. And I think in his heart, he always did. Even though he was so disillusioned by the Catholic Church and so discouraged by the hierarchy, I think there was a place in his heart that always deeply loved the church. And it gave him incredible insight and incredible sorrow.
Did he see this happening elsewhere? I mean, this concern about child sexual abuse is not limited to the church. Do the same kind of principles that he applied to thinking about how to track it in the church apply to other areas? Did he think about schools or elsewhere?
Well, yes, he did. And of course, I think wherever you have power relationships and people in authority who are not accountable, you're going to find child sexual abuse. Richard believed, and I agree with him, that this problem is more serious in the Catholic Church because of the culture of celibacy. And if you look at the numbers, you know, they're pretty horrific. I mean, in Boston, it's 10%. But in the handful of dioceses where we have all the records, the percentage is more than Richard's initial estimate of 6%. But the percentage always approaches about 10%.
I mean, you have a unique perspective, not just on Richard, but on this whole problem of sexual abuse in the church. And I wonder what your feeling about it in the current climate is. Do you think this is mostly a solved problem, mostly a buried problem? Where does it stand?
No, this is not a solved problem at all. Scandals about clergy sexual abuse continue to erupt all over the world. I mean, we're now in a situation where there have been allegations that Cardinal McCarrick, the Washington, D.C. cardinal, abused seminarians in New Jersey. We have the third highest ranking official in the Vatican, Cardinal George Pell, on trial in Australia. This will not stop. It will not stop. And I guess what's amazing is that the Vatican still hasn't really done anything about it. And this has been going on so long that I now question whether the Vatican is able to do anything about it. And I think Richard had that same question.
Are there things you want people, just to switch back from the institutional to the personal, to know about Richard, about his life?
Well, Richard was a very surprisingly gentle man and a deeply compassionate man. And he traveled all over the country as an expert witness, and everywhere he went, he got to know victims of clergy sexual abuse. And somehow, they all remained his friends. They've all stayed in touch with him. The lawyers have all stayed in touch with him. The therapists have all stayed in touch with him. There's something about him that's very warm and very embracing. Despite all the horrors that he has discovered, he remained a very gentle, compassionate person with kind of a gift for friendship.
Well, you wrote penned a remarkable sort of remembrance of him in the Globe, and you closed with a couplet from a poem that he'd written, and I gather you brought that poem with you. Hopefully you'll read it.
I did, and I would love to read it. You know, at the end of his life, Richard wrote quite a bit of poetry, and he wrote two collections, and he wrote about death quite a bit, not surprisingly. And this is a poem called At My Graveside. Tell no lies as you give me to my grave. Fear not my imperfections. They were cause for good. My peace with the universe embraces light and darkness. Scars speak of battles won and lost. My faults served some others well, all worth the cost. Truth alone will honor what I've been or done.
It's a remarkable poem to read after his death. Thank you. Well, that's Michael Resendiz. He's a Boston Globe correspondent and a former member of the Globe Spotlight team that exposed the Catholic Church's cover-up of clergy sex abuse. That reporting won the 2003 Pulitzer Prize. Thanks, Michael.
My pleasure.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Evan Horowitz. This is Radio Boston.